Hello and welcome to My Songs Suck, the show where we listen to bad songs from good writers. I'm Alex Smith and I'm a musician.
I'm James Keogh and I'm the friend of a musician. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of My Songs Suck. I'm Alex Smith.
I'm James Keogh.
And we are joined by a very special guest in the studio today. We've got Brad McCaw. Say hello.
Greetings, one and all. Hello.
Yeah. You're a sizable guest once again.
What does that mean? I'm large?
Yes.
I'm a large man.
Just insult our guest
quite
on the
masculine,
well.
Thank you.
Oh, no. I quit. I'm fired.
It was a good episode. See you, lads.
Yeah, anyway.
You've toured the world with the Ten Tenors. You've produced and orchestrated 3 musical theatre recordings. You performed in lead roles with New Musicals Australia, Opera Queensland Theatre Company, and Underground Opera Company, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. And you've had a bunch of shows on cruises as well. Yep. That you've made. A long list of very cool things that you've done.
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate, I think, that I've just been working now professionally for kind of since I left high school. And so I've just kept diverse. And I was just talking about this with someone just the other day, actually, that if you're fortunate enough to not do another job, which sometimes can be good and sometimes be bad, but in my case you just have to just do lots and lots of stuff to just find a way to get paid. So that's really why my CV is so varied.
So my face is so varied.
That's the dream though, right? You've done it.
Yeah, I think it is and it isn't too, because in some regard it's you diversify beyond what your original passion was. I didn't ever see myself, you know. The show that I do is called Fastest Piano in the West, and it's, you know, it's a headline show and it's pretty great. I travel the world and, you know, it's a big band and all sorts of stuff. But sometimes that's not what I would want to be doing or would rather be doing, and I'm certainly grateful for it. But, you know, and other times I've, you know, been a hired gun in lots of bands and still do that sort of stuff. So, you know, all of us just got to pay our rent, you know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And one section of your storied history is the band called Friends of Hers.
Yes. I laugh because we're still waiting for those awards to come in.
Oh, right. Yeah. Any day now. Any day.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, Friends of Hers was a band that I formed with Dave Bell, Steel Chabot. Dave Bell, actually. And they're actually quite prominent musicians in the Queensland Australian scene. Dave Bell plays... Steel Chabot plays with Chukalay, and he played with MKO Sun, and now with the Resin Dogs. He's a bass player. Kingfisher, Dave Bell plays drums for Kingfisher, and Brad Parker was the guitarist, and I don't know what he's doing now. And then, of course, I went on to sort of work more in musical theatre, and that's kind of what I write for mostly these days.
True. Because Friends of Hers is the band that you were in when you wrote the song that you've brought to us today.
That's right.
Dig. And how long had you been playing at the time of this recording? Because you guys sound very skilled and good.
Yeah, I think, look, I know what the show's about. I really did try and find some crap, but I've deleted it all. So, I mean, I'm not proud of this, but I know that there's some great qualities about it. And I know that, you know, it's recorded well and, you know, it's a song and it stands up as a song, but it's still pretty average.
Well, that's
think.
You know? Well, it's all about the perspective, because a lot of the times we have people bring on songs that we think are really good, but then the guest is like, no, it's real bad for these reasons. So it's always interesting to see why you feel like it's
not. It's like, look away. Don't look at my baby photo.
Yeah, right. Know? Yeah.
My shirt's not on. I'm naked.
Well, should we
Let's
jump
dive
into
in,
it?
Yeah.
Is there anything you want us to know before we listen to it?
No, I don't know if there is anything. Look, I think it'd be better for you listening now to just hear it blindly and we can talk about it after. That'd probably be more fun.
Fair. Sure thing. All right, well, let's listen to Dig.
The prodigal son returns. Start up fights
They say you were a genius, but they say that the cost was your health. Oh, 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 it's a shame, 'cause everybody knows your name. It's a shame, 'cause everybody knows your name. Oh, I better not have missed a day.
Dig.
Yeah. How you feel?
I feel like I've been violated. No. It's really interesting to listen to it now. There's so much. Look, I think everyone else on the track was great except for me. I think the drumming was great by Dave. I think Steele's bass part's pretty awesome. I think everyone loves the groove predominantly, but I think the story leaves a lot to be desired, gentlemen.
What is the story of this song?
Well, I wrote it, so I'd just seen the film Dig, which was about, I think it was Brian Jonestown Massacre and Andy Warhol, or the band, the Dandy Warhols.
And right.
It's been so long since I've seen it, but like their feud between the two, and I guess it was why the Dandy Warhols were successful and then why Jonestown Massacre wasn't. And I think it was because they were just, from memory, and this is just me talking at the top of my head, that it was a bit of a disaster. You know, it was, they got pulled over in Georgia, and then the cop said, "Do you have drugs in the car?" which was the form of the chorus. Pulled over in Georgia, luck is where the Warhols are. So I think the film was trying to say that one was, when you really slow it down and make that melody audible, it's really quite good. And I think the other thing that I'm really sensitive about was just my vocal take. So that was me singing on it, and at the time was just in this cross, like theatrical kind of rock thing. I remember one reviewer said, a welcome piece of artifice to the world of rock and roll. And it was kind of like this crazy backhanded compliment. It's kind of like, no, just give it a shot. It's kind of impressive when he squeals and screams a little bit. But, you know, they referenced Freddie Mercury in it, which I was kind of, at the time, I was like, wow, that's a really cool thrill. But it's, I just had no idea of story, you know, which is not a bad thing or anything to be really embarrassed about, even though I cringe a little bit, but Yeah, that's me unpacking it like a therapy session.
Yeah.
Does really everyone have that kind of effect when they hear these songs, do you think?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's always you kind of placating the artist a little bit. It's not that bad.
It's half podcast, half therapy session where we're just like, you know, yeah, talking through.
Don't get us wrong. If it's bad and they're like, it's bad, we'll be like, yes.
This is you're right. Rubbish.
Let's talk about that. It's more just how bad are we allowed to say it is.
Yeah, usually. Yeah.
Oh, you can like, go to town on it. You know, I've already recognized the quality of the other lads. So, I mean, that's you know.
I really like this. The very thing that you mentioned, the kind of the musical theater in the rock setting, that's my whole entire jam. I really like that.
Yeah, right.
And the really jazzy bridge bit.
Oh, yeah.
I think that if you were just like playing Keno at the pub and this band started doing that, you'd be like, what is this? But I think if you liked the band and you were there, you'd be like, yes, because I really, really love that bit where it's like, that's real cool.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah.
Versatile. It's nice. It's good.
And you were on the piano as well.
Played piano on that. Yeah,
piano was fantastic. I really thought it was great.
Yeah, I remember that being one of the tracks. So we did an EP.
Yeah.
And we did it over a couple of days. I think it was only one day probably. And I remember thinking when I played those licks, oh, wow, I've played something that I'd be happy for people to listen to.
Right.
Something that kind of happened in the moment and was we captured and we caught this beautiful line or what I thought was a line. Mm. You know, the do-do-do-do-do-do. Those things, I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So I do remember that. And listening back, I was kind of thinking in my head when I wrote that, sort of, you know, going back and high-fiving everyone like, yeah, I'm a god. Yeah.
You mentioned that it didn't have much story, whereas I feel that, like, because it's a rock song, and I think that because you seem to have a very strong musical theater background, I think that definitely it doesn't have as much story as a musical theater song, but I think it has more story than the average rock song. Sometimes I just feel like, oh, I feel good, I think it definitely could use more, but like, there's like story there, you know?
Yeah, but I think this is the thing. It's like, it's got a story, but the story isn't communicated and no one else is in on the story except for the person that saw the film. Like, that's to me, true. That's the biggest problem with my writing until even only the last year, if I'm really honest. I feel like that I just didn't, there was a few key things that I didn't really, couldn't grasp. And I mean, it's different when you're talking about writing musical theatre, which is what I do predominantly now. Mm. You know, I've written for all different genres and, you know, we'll do all sorts of different things, but primarily, you know, I tell bigger, large stories with larger concepts in which you have to fulfill, you know, longer arcs than just, as you said, I feel good, which is pretty incredible. And I think like the simplicity of something, to make something, to be able to communicate something with simplicity is really what we're all trying to do. I think when we're trying to write a song, we're trying to get that across and let people have an experience, because it's hard to do that in a really simple way. And the simpler it is, the more universal it is. Mm-hmm. So that was complicated dribble in my opinion in reference to dig, but fair. Yeah, but that's fine too, because you know, got to start somewhere.
I will say, when you, because you mentioned like, oh, I was inspired by this movie, and I checked out the trailer, that did, like, a lot of it made like a lot more sense. I was like, oh exactly. of course.
Yeah, maybe it's like a compliment, maybe it's like a bonus track, like the film, you watch a film, you get to listen to this song, you go, yeah, that's exactly what it was like. And it probably was. It was like at the end of the film, I went, I'm writing a song about this, I'm Bob Dylan, I've been inspired by something and I'm gonna write this thing, like and then and so I just obviously spat out what happened to the film.
Here's the plot of the film.
Yeah, here's the plot with no context. But
that's interesting, because I wonder how much of, you know, knowing what is going on in a song contributes to how much someone, like, you know, the everyday listener might not know what's going on in here, but might still enjoy it. Like,
yeah.
Because I, you know, listening to this, even though I had no idea what, you know, the luck is where the war holes are, what that meant or anything, I could still appreciate sort of it being a good song. I wonder, like, how much intrinsically a person has to understand what's happening in a song to like enjoy it musically, you know?
Musically specifically?
Yeah, Because
I mean, I think it comes down to then what we're kind of, why we're doing what we're doing. Like as a writer, what your end game is or what kind of experience you want people to have or you're hoping people have. Because I think you're right, that's it. Because if you want to write something that like people internalize a certain way, like this is super wanky what I'm about to say, but like if you want someone to kind of listen to a song and kind of get you know, there's some songs that I don't get at all, and I'll listen and I'll kind of have a really like a cerebral experience, or I'll feel a certain way about it, and I'll go, that was cool. And how I feel about the song is like the most important thing.
Yes.
And I stay present in that all the time. This is super, super analytical and wanky. And then sometimes like a song slips in and it sneaks you in and it takes you to another place, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow. I did not expect to go back to when I was five thinking about that that girl, that person that kind of I saw across the room, and what the hell? How did that happen? You know, I think it depends, because some people really want to write that first and the second one's a bit schmaltzy and a bit wanky for them, you know? So I think it's me. I'm always just I just know that I'm all about uber relatability. That's something I'm really passionate about, and it's become a big point of what I feel my kind of thing is, and I'm really passionate about it. So I think you're right. But for me, it means I've been unsuccessful because it's not what I'm trying to do, you know?
Trying to communicate a story, trying to tell...
I think so, yeah. Or try and fool someone into having a feeling.
Right, yeah.
Like, or no, that's probably a bit harsh. That's a bit silly to put it like that. But yeah, I think I probably...
That's a thing. What context did you write this for people to listen to it? Because I know some songs are like, oh, this is put in the background and dance, or like, this is musical theatre, we sit down and pay attention, or like, you know, we set a vibe. You know, like how did you intend this song to be listened to?
I don't think I had any concept of that then. Like, I think I've really had to kind of think about that. The more, like, I think as a writer, we have to like go into ourselves, and then you come out the other side, and you've really got to get to a point where you've really got to look back at what you've done and then what you're doing and the song, and sort of go, okay, this is missing something and I need to work out what that is to make this the best song it can be. And sometime, so I think, so what was the question? I just got lost in my own imagery.
Just sort of the context in which you imagine people listening
I don't
to your songs.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I don't think I really had any concept of that, because I was just writing what felt good to me. Mm-hmm. And I came from a background where I'd never really... You know, I listened to a lot of Whitlam, so, you know, Tim Friedman is like uber, just the beautiful turn of phrase, and nothing really lands in terms of a story, but it's lots of imagery that you piece together and you sort of go away with this beautiful wash of kind of what I felt about something, but no one really knows exactly what happens. You know, there's a letter on a cassette, you know, we don't write anymore, better make it up quickly, there's people asleep on the second floor. Like, when you think it out, you see it. But then he goes to the hook, there's no aphrodisiac like loneliness, truth, beauty, and picture of you. I guess I'm filling in all those blanks.
Yeah.
And because all his songs are like that, and that was my biggest influence, I didn't have half his command of language. I didn't have a fraction of it. So I just wrote all these things that didn't really make sense, but didn't give enough to kind of let you in.
Yeah.
This is how I think about it. So
a little trail of breadcrumbs. You're
there was
like,
no
oh,
breadcrumbs. Yeah. You know, like it was just a piece of bread. but that's so I didn't have any, to answer your question a long way, I didn't have any context of what I was trying to do. And I think I was just kind of pleasing myself, which you're right, can be a lot of fun for people to just to listen to a thing, like looking at a flower, isn't it? You don't think too hard about it. You just go, it's a nice flower. But I think now, if you want something to really work, you got to kind of look at the structure and look at the walls that's holding up the roof, and you got to make sure that the window's in the right place, and you got to make sure that the front door where we come in is, you know, at the front of the house. I think all that's really kind of the best way I think about writing now.
You have the vocal delivery has a lot of character in it. Was that the character that you had as the singer of this band, or was that... for this song?
I don't know. I was super embarrassed by it.
I like it.
I seen you too. Like, I wanted to play that other one because I thought I was more genuine. I don't know. Oh God, how much of therapy is this? I think I was trying to be a rock star. But I think I'll never and ever be, I'll always just be a musical theater kind of cabaret guy.
Right.
So I think I was trying to be rock, and just kind of it just fell into this kind of pseudo sound. So
yeah.
You know, I didn't realize at the time, then looking back, it's like, wow, that's a really bold choice. It's a really, really confident, bold sound, you know?
I mean, you sold it to me. I was having a good time. Yeah. I was like, you got to do it without all your guitars, boy.
Guitars, boy!
Oh, that was very good.
That was great.
And that's the thing, is like, you could tell you were going for a style, and you were kind of putting... You know, you weren't just sort of singing that. You were putting a lot of oomph into it, we may be able to look back and, you know, sort of have it be a bit cringy. But, like, you can tell you're putting your heart into that at the very least.
I mean, I'm not short on enthusiasm.
Right.
You know, I think my thing has always been let's just get a bit more genuine. For me, that's always been kind of my journey, is to not to, to energy, but kind of just to be more present, I think.
Sure.
It's always been, so that's, it's interesting that then it's still enjoyable. That's great.
And how have you kind of tried to do that over the years, like try to get more genuine with your voice? Has it been a conscious effort to sort of be, bring more of yourself to what you're singing?
Yeah, I think it's the more experience we get and the more we go out and work in different ways. I think, you know, the job asks of you to do different things, and if you put yourself in different places, this is for me at least, like, so when I was, you know, starting doing, you know, covers gigs and being a hired gun, and I still do that, but, you know, you play that and you play the song a certain way, and you got to fulfill the requirement of, if I'm playing I Feel Good, you got to give it a bit of James Brown if you can manage to get in that ballpark.
Yeah.
So you kind of, you know, learn to do that, or if, you know, you're singing Green Day, you want to sort of lean to that.
Yeah.
But then once you try and sort of start to be yourself and you do your gigs, you're kind of trying to reach people, and I think then you're trying to go, okay, well, why aren't they connecting in? And, maybe I'm performing too much. Let's see if I can let them in and see me a bit more, or things like that. So I think coming from acting first, I probably was just more of a performer.
Sure.
And less of kind of a troubadour, I think. And in my experience, I sort of found a way to try and do less of one or the other. It's hard though, because, you know, in doing a cruise show, which is all about gags, and, you know, I'm a big ham. It's kind of, I've always been a big joke. I just love a good joke. So love a good laugh. So I don't know. This is, I'm getting pretty deep into the, the honesty, but that's kind of, I think it has been a conscious choice to answer your question.
Cool. Yeah. That's awesome. Alex, did you have something to say? I feel like I cut you off at some point, and I was like, oh, I should apologize to Alex. It's like, in my mind, I was apologize to Alex. It's like a note I have. And I'm like, all right, let's come back to that. Apologize to Alex. Sorry, Alex.
Aren't you going to recognize that he just apologized to you?
Oh, thanks, buddy.
See, this is
you're
beautiful.
You're all G. You're
How
all good.
Did that make you feel, Alex? Like, did that make you feel good?
Oh, man, the therapy's getting turned back on us. I wasn't prepared for this. This is not this how this dynamic works.
Zane, turn your mic on. We're gonna continue.
Yeah, we need to get a second opinion on this.
It was a boring question. I was gonna say, you said that this song wasn't indicative of the music that Friends of Hers did. So, what was you guys' normal kind of song?
What was that style?
That's a boring question.
No, so. It's great.
I don't know. This was definitely the grooviest, I think. Like, we did a whole bunch of stuff, I guess, because I wrote a whole bunch of different stuff. So we played, like, there's a country tune, which is kind of countries, but not really country. I mean, it's all very theatrical anyway, because this was before I'd kind of, someone said to me, you should write a musical. So probably 3 years after this, or 2 years, actually maybe even 1 year, someone said, write a musical. And that's the musical that I'm working on at the moment that opens in August. My first major production, which has been 10 years in the making, 9 years in the making.
Wow.
And so I had no idea that I was theatrical. And then, so kind of, I think looking back, you can see that's a country song, but it's still kind of like a performance of a country song. And then this one's kind of like this Radiohead kind of thing, because the guitarist love Radiohead. So that goes in there. And I guess that's what it's like when you're at a band. It's kind of shades of this and that.
Yeah.
So I never really thought about it to ask a question, but I don't think it was particularly anything really. It was just a whole bunch of different.
Just people coming together.
I think so.
Music.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
You know, and Dave Bell, who, as I said, plays drums for Kingfisher. Yeah. Like, he, you know, he was really strong on what he felt we should do, and he had a lot of great ideas. So we do that, and the guitar player, obviously at the time, did you know his thing,
and it all happened.
It was a democracy, yeah.
Yeah,
where we all reap the benefits. You know.
Yeah. One thing I want to kind of zoom in on, because you mentioned someone just saying to you, "Hey, you should write a musical," and then 9 years, 10 years later, here you are, like. Before that moment, you know, writing a musical, was that anything you'd ever considered?
No, not at all. Never considered it. Never in my life. And it's funny, around the time a few people said it to me, it's really a fascinating to look back on for me and hopefully for people listening. So I was doing a gig with Simone Pitot. She was a Brisbane artist. She's in Canada now. And we were doing this thing at the old Troubadour, Black Bear Lodge. I was playing my songs, and this before Friends of Hers. I played a song. She goes, "That's so beautiful. Have you ever thought about writing a musical?" I'm like, "Why would you say that? Like, I'm an artist. I'm a rock and roll star, you know? I loved Billy Joel. So I wanted to be kind of, you know, I had that kind of, I'm a nice boy, but really I'm a rock and roller thing, you know, down pat." So, and then someone else said it, and then someone called me up and asked me to write a show, and that was Megan Shorey and Joy Mars Creative, and she's a Brisbane producer. And then the show went on and I kind of caught the bug and just kept learning how to do that. And that's been the vehicle for me to become a better writer, is cool. Learning how to tell stories and do that stuff. So yeah. It's pretty wild.
That is really cool that it's like that, just that moment or that, you know, series of moments in that one space of time that changed, you know, everything. Like,
and it's become my life. Like at the time I thought I'd be doing all these major musicals, and I thought that I'd, you know, I'd stay uber fit and I'd do dance all the time, and I'd, you know, I'd be one of those guys that would try and, you know, do all the shows that go around, and it just didn't end up being my life. What ended up happening was me writing this musical and going, oh, this is pretty good, and then winning a couple of awards for playwriting and going, actually, maybe life's trying to say to me that this is what I could be good at, and I stick with it a bit longer, and then all of a sudden, I'm kind of too far to go back. I'm too deep in. And I just love it so much now. Like that feeling of a new, you know, it's like when you write a song and you're sharing it with someone and at the end people clap and they love it. You go, this is the coolest thing ever.
Totally. Yeah.
And for me, it's even more. It's the collaboration. It's, you know, playing a song for an actor the first time. And when I started out, I had no idea how big collaboration was a part of it. But now I'll play them a song and they'll sort of go, they'll help lead where the song goes. And I wonder if it's just always like that, that you need people to push and pull, and whether it's in a band or whether it's your producer behind the desk or whether it's, you know, your partner that you play the song to or the person on the street as you're busking. I just think it's kind of all bouncing off each other.
Yeah, I think there's definitely like a perception of musicians, especially like solo musicians, as these auteurs who sort of do it all and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it is, you're right, it's such a collaborative effort. That's so great, yeah.
I think it is. But then again, I wonder whether maybe I'm just weak and soft and not good at my job. This is a question I ask myself because I wonder, I don't think it's true. I think I'm being a bit harsh on myself. But I think that, you know, you wonder, does Stephen Sondheim, you know, for example, if you're a theatre fan or does... You know, like, does he put a song in front of Audra McDonald and she go, well, you know what? And I almost tried to do an impression of her then, and I'm really glad I pulled myself up for so many reasons. Or like, you know, like take Billy Joel. Do you know, I know that with Just the Way You Are, which is, I think, one of the greatest pop songs ever written and the reason that I started playing piano and writing songs.
Wow, yeah.
And he kind of, you know, he took it in and the drummer ended up playing that feel, that whatever it's that samba kind of thing. And then the producer, Phil Ramone, said, no, turn it on its head. I can't remember the story, but ended up playing this slap kind of dun. You listen to the track, and if he just played a like this kind of hi-hat heavy thing, it would be a totally kind of naff song. But with this fat, he's slapping away, and then, you know, jagat just falls in this groove, and it's just the most beautiful thing. And that's the other thing that I'm just a fiend for now. Just when all the pieces come together and it just sits and it's this perfect connection of all these different things, I just get a mega buzz from that. Yeah. It just feels super cool.
Oh, that's awesome. And like, I don't know. It feels great because you can share in the victory as well. It's not just like, you know, I've done this, and then like, you're the only one who gets to like feel the praise. It feels like everyone is collaborating and everyone gets to kind of share in that moment.
That's so true. I hadn't thought of that actually, that it's better because you get to share it with someone. That's really cool. Yeah.
That's just my thought, you know.
Yeah.
I guess I'm pretty smart.
I
don't know. I'm not a musician or anything, but I'm pretty smart.
You know, you're the friend of one, and that's exactly. Really, you know, you're a better person for it.
That's
you
right. Yeah, see?
Yeah.
I have a small dumb question that I don't think I'll have the opportunity to ask again. So I'm gonna ask it.
Okay.
You know, in like sheet music when you have like a melody.
Yeah.
Like for Broadway stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes there'll be like a really intricate, very unique trill that like a certain performer does. Do you write out the trill in the sheet music?
Or so you mean like a riff? Like you mean like, so let's for example, the end of Wicked where she goes.
I was just thinking of that one. Yeah, yeah.
Look, it's hard to know. I've got one, which is in Let's Not Have This Fight, which is in Becoming Bill, which opens this August in Brisbane, if you're listening right now. and Catherine McIntyre, she was a part of the show for a very, very long time. She was a part of the very first development. I heard her voice and fell in love with it, and she did it for a long time. And she did the recording, and she sung a riff at the end of that in the recording that she made up that I didn't write. And then when we auditioned the project this year, people came in and sung her riff. And it was really interesting because, like, you know, it's kind of like I didn't write it, but she's kind of, you know, people are singing a piece of kind of what she did. There's some things that I've written really particularly, like some bits I've sung and then the actor tries to replicate that. Me being a singer, obviously I share demos sometimes or and sheet music, but I think it's kind of a chicken and an egg situation where we never really know, because who knows, Idina Menzel could have, only the people that were in the room would know, she could have just gone, I had this idea. Or the director could have said, you know what we need? We need her to be there and we need her to be triumphant at the end as she gets pulled up or whatever. I can't remember what happens in The Wicked, but, and she's there with the broom and then we need her to be like, I'm going forward into the thing, sing a note. And just like, ah! Oh, you know what would be good, honey? What if I do this, you know? And that could just be the classic, you know, Idina Menzel. Like, who knows? Let's go dig through podcasts and find out what she said. But it's both. It's both. To answer your question in a really short, specific way, both.
And I think,
and not a dumb question. Sorry to cut you off. Not a dumb question. It's interesting.
I've always wondered that.
Yeah.
And I think it comes back to what we were saying before about collaboration and not just like, you know, that it's not... Yeah, you're right. It's often both. It could be anyone coming in and saying, I have an idea, and having that idea be heard and having that idea be like as respected as, you know, someone who is the writer saying, no, actually, you can't do this because I'm the writer and I say it's this. It's like, no, having that open communication.
100%.
Yeah.
Look, there's a fine line too, because it's like if I came in and I said, you should do this with your show, you'd be like, well, hold on, dude. Like, come on, like, fair go. But then if there was kind of a right time for it and it's like a shared, idea, then it's, I think the best idea will float to the surface. Yeah. I just think that's if, I think we're all better for that philosophy. So yeah, I totally agree.
You've mentioned a couple times. I was like, well, wait till, because we're going to listen to a song from your new musical at the end.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to talk it out too much at the start.
No, it's cool. Please, let's just talk about it like crazy.
we've clicked over the halfway point.
It's going to take me 10 years to run. I'm happy to be talking about it.
Yeah, let's get into it. All right.
I was going to say, well, that's because I have a thing you started in 2010, right? Or even probably before that.
No, 2010 was when I started. So I was asked to write the show, yeah. So that was when I started. I wrote these songs at the piano, just kind of thinking about my life and thinking about different things. And then I put them in an order and then I put a loose story around them and then put it in front of people and they were really moved and they stood up at the end and they applauded. And I went, and I still remember going back and thinking after going to that, like the little dressing room, it was at the Judith Wright Center, and there's this little door where you go into it. I remember going and going, that is the coolest experience I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
Because I played piano, I made up piano parts, I acted in it. It was completely mad. but it just felt right and there was a bit of magic in the room and then it's taken me 9 years to finish it because whatever was right about it, the heart in the story was really there, really present, but I didn't know how to tell a story. I knew how to communicate feeling. I knew how to write a song that made people go, oh, well, I want to know more about that. Yeah. But I didn't know how to put a row of those in order and take a character on a journey that, you know, is really interesting. So it's been...
And what was that process like from going to, you know, I don't know how to tell a story to now having to tell this massive story? You know, what was that 9 years like?
It was a lot of arrogant times thinking I knew.
Oh, good. Nice.
Like first draft doing it, putting it in front of people and going, so...
Pretty good, huh?
I nailed it, right? And them going, well, it's kind of okay. Look, I don't know. It's funny, isn't it? I think it's kind of... I think it's... It gets to a point, it's like your 10,000 hours.
Mm.
You know, it's that, I really think it's that. I think it's, you know, I've read every play I can find. I've watched everything from bootlegs to Broadway HD. I've taken 2 trips to New York. I've been to West End. I spent far too much money on seeing 2 Harry Potters in a row. Why? I don't know. But like, because I just, every time I just, you know, I live and breathe it and I want to know as much as I could.
Yeah.
And I've analysed. It's, you know, I think when you read something and you try and – it's imperative, I think, if you want to get better at something and you know that you don't have the right recipe to do the thing, whatever that is, whether it's writing a song, whether it's writing a book, whether it's writing a play, whether it's writing anything, you obviously have to go to the chapel where all the best ones are and you've got to, you know, learn what they've done so then you can try and implement that, you know. We've all played Satisfaction for a reason. Because it's just a great song, you know? And if you pick that apart, you go, well, they got a lick, they got these cool chords, they've got a great story or a great hook and a great, you know, and then just the band's vibe and there's all these key things that you need for a song to work, you know? And in a story, you then need to learn about why the character's doing this and then what that effect has on that, and then all these things that each one takes you to another understanding, and it's like you're building this pyramid, I think, where you kind of, you sort of start at the top, and it's only when you get to the bottom kind of that it can all stand up and kind of make sense, and you got all these little things you're moving around, and even redrafting now, it's just nuts, you know?
Yeah.
And I only feel like now that I'm really starting to get it, really. As we move towards production and we're redrafting and we're doing stuff, do I kind of feel like I kind of get it? And sure. And look, hopefully it's a huge success and people really enjoy it and this all sounds really smart.
Yeah.
And it's not awful and I sound like a complete twat. But, you know, yeah. Yeah. He says, pausing to wonder.
No, I'm sure, you know, 9 years can't be wrong. You must have done something right.
Yeah, I just think it is a big thing.
Yeah.
And I think it takes a lot of work, and I think a lot of people have done it really well, and we stand on their shoulders in a lot of way, and they teach us kind of what we need to get better at, I think, is the easiest way of putting it.
Yeah.
How would you say that the show itself has changed over the time? Because you mentioned before it was just you and a piano, and it looks like there's cast members now.
Yeah, well, there was 4 people in the original thing. And what's really fascinating is the original show, because it was very intimate, so it was like a cabaret, but it wasn't a cabaret because it had a story. In that it's, you know, this guy, Bill, is telling this story about his long-term girlfriend that they can't work it out. The brother won't get off the couch. He's been on there for 3 months. He just sort of drinks and just does nothing and plays on his phone. The mum just drinks wine and just sort of wants everyone to just be better, just, you know, just be happy. And then he's just stuck in between them all. And so everyone had a song, and the funny thing was is, well, I can't say that because then it gives it away, but...
Spoilers.
Well, what I've realized at the time, it was about me being sort of that age in my... sort of what, early 20s or whatever it was. And I was writing a lot about, I couldn't get into uni. Why wasn't I getting into WAPA? You know, why can't I make sense of life? Yeah. And now it's about a guy writing a show about these people. And it questions that we all have a story, but when is it true and when is it not? Like we see people a certain way, we write them in a certain light, but how much is that kind of, you know, I wrote a song for what I thought my mum would say, but how do I know?
Right, yeah.
You know, it's kind of, and the show is all about, you know, Bill, this guy, is trying to tell a story, and by telling a story, he opens up this doorway to be more honest. And in the end, stories are how we tell our most sincere truth as human beings. And so that's kind of what the show is about. But it's been a journey of 9 years to get right to what I just said then.
Right.
Seems so simple, but it took me so long to get to a point where I understood it. And I had to come at it from so many different ways. But I've also been on the journey of an emerging writer, and I've been telling people for ages, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm emerging until I've got a show up and then another show. I think once I've had 2 shows and they're both good and people see them and go, I like that. Like people that like musicals go, that made sense. I understood it. That was a good show. Then I'll go, cool, I know what I'm doing. Until then, it's all just guesswork really, you know.
And necessary guesswork, and you know, 100%, guesswork that
because we're learning, we're all learning. Yeah. Like, we've got to acknowledge it. But the thing with musicals, it's like if you do the record with your band, you go into a rehearsal room, you've done that, and it's like, you've learned something from that process. But a musical, what can you not learn without putting it on stage,
right?
And then seeing what it's like when people are there, and seeing what you don't know, and it's you know, look, I shouldn't be. This is not, look, people that listen to your show are people that care about art and care about writing. Yeah. So this is probably interesting, but it's obviously not mum and dad that goes, I've got $100, I'm only going to spend it on something that's really good. And the show's going to be really good, don't get me wrong. And it's only $50. So, but yeah, we're all on that journey, you're right, to kind of work out what we don't know. And I think it's only if you keep going do you get to the other end, you know.
Yeah.
Usain Bolt, why is he so good? Why was he so good? Why was Ricky Ponting such a great cricketer? Why, you know, it's... No one. It's this true thing about you only get good by just doing it and getting better and working out what you don't know. Why do NBA players, I love basketball.
Yeah.
Every year in the off season, they go away and they learn on stuff that they don't know. So when they come back, they have a new trick, a new plan of attack, a new move that can beat the person. That's just how you keep getting better. Yeah. So there's this fallacy, I think, as artists, we start out, we go, well, this song's just going to come to me.
Right.
It's going to be great and it's going to be here and everyone's going to go, this guy's the new Paul Kelly. You know, it's kind of like with no sort of thought of how long he sits around and crafts a song and holds on to it, you know, and all that sort of stuff that we all know, but I guess it's good to remind ourselves that it's all part of the fun.
That's right, yeah. Because often you don't see that kind of the transparency or the sort of the years behind the Paul Kelly and the, you know, yeah, that kind of stuff. So you would just imagine that, like, they just started, they were always that good, obviously, you know, like, born that great. But yeah, no, it's great to see that work has been put in to what we have coming out in August, Becoming Bill.
It's pretty, yeah, I'm really excited. I can't wait to hear what people think. And I'm sure it's going to be really great, but it's, yeah, I have nothing more to add to that. That's a very lovely thing to say.
Yeah, I should just shut up. we usually ask, Alex usually asks it, but I want to kind of ask it now.
No, do it, man.
All right. What advice would you give to...
Hey, that's my thing. No, I'm kidding.
What advice would you give to people who are just starting out and maybe want to start out doing music, doing musicals, doing any sort of creative work? What advice do you have to give?
That's a great question.
Thank you. It is, isn't it? I'm kidding, I'm sorry.
I've listened to a couple of your shows and I remember some advice different people have given, and I'm trying to not copy just things that they've said. I think it's gonna be tough, isn't the right word. I think it is tough, but I think there's a real joy in, I think if you love it, it'll always be enough. It'll just feel like it's not at times. Like, to me, I can't envision doing anything else, even though sometimes I wish that maybe it was different for whatever that might be. I wish I'd have a budget of $1 million to put on these things, or I wish that, you know, Stephen Sondheim was my uncle and I could call him up. Even then, there's no guarantees that anything's going to happen. And I think this is my point. That it's just the unknown, I guess, just try and be a little bit more comfortable with it because that's what we deal with, whether we're trying to come up with a song, whether we're trying to write a melody, whether we're trying to get a gig, whether we're trying to book an agent, whether we're trying to go to a new city to expand our audience, it's all just, we have no idea. So I think just know that everyone has that. Everyone. And I think the other thing is, someone said really, so that's one thing. Another thing is, it's about building up who you work with and you don't do it alone. I wish that I'd realized that earlier, that the more people you let into your circle, and of course they've got to be the right people, but you can't do everything. No one can. And if you have, you know, passionate people that are going to, not fight for you, but kind of help you get along your way, then that's going to... It's easy just to sit in your room and write songs and then go to your gig and do that, and that's just... I've sort of lost my point a little bit as I was kind of having a feeling about what I was saying, but I think you've... It sounds... I guess what I heard myself say is it's harder to do that than it sounds, but you've just got to take risks and you've got to write to people. Don't be afraid to say, you know, here's my song, or here's my... I want to write musicals. People reach out to, you know, other composers and look for mentorship. You know, write to, if you're an actor, Queensland Theatre, and find out when the next auditions are. Like, be active. You know, don't be afraid to get a no. I think that's what I was trying to say, and that will expand kind of your reach. And
And if you don't mind me piggybacking on that point,
save me, please, please. I was floundering
about expanding the people in your network, or the people that you interact with. You know, imagine if you didn't have that person who was like, "Hey, you should write a musical."
Exactly.
You know, like, having those people who will challenge you and will, like, push you in different directions and things, you know, make you do things you never thought you'd ever do. It seems like it was so important for your process and for your journey. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
Well, let's all have a hug.
Yeah, big old group
podcast
hug.
Podcast hug.
Podcast hug for your ears.
So this bit will pan to left and right and we'll just
hug.
By you say H, I'll say U, you say G.
Oh, this is good. Right. Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
H-G. Fuck.
And once again, I've ruined it.
That's just good podcasting, folks.
I don't know if it is, isn't it?
Speaking of podcasting.
Hey.
You have two podcasts, right?
Well, one's not out yet.
Oh, never mind. You have one's out.
So, Making Musicals is on this very channel.
Yeah.
Of network, I should say. That's not canon. And it's a show that we've been working on for about a year. And we're so excited to get it out eventually, but it's just taking so much time because it's a really big. Yeah, it's about making musicals, and I went to New York, and over 10 days I did lots of interviews and all sorts of things, but we're putting, you know, real interview footage with me going about the streets and kind of monologuing about different things, and it's kind of like true crime meets memoir meets arts education. So if you imagine that, and then across 24 episodes that we're making, so it's a huge undertaking. So it's worth the wait, so you can follow us and kind of watch the preview or listen to the preview and be the first to kind of hear what's... when it comes out, when it drops, and you can be the first to tell your friends about it. That's pretty cool. You know, I was so close to being a good sell, and then I just worked too hard at the end there, didn't I?
Oh, that was good.
Became a secondhand car salesman there for a little bit.
That's right.
It will never break down.
Are you allowed to talk about the second one yet, or is that a secret for the moment?
I think it's probably more. It's just I feel like I'm muddying everything. It's just another one that we're working on, which is not even close to coming out yet.
Fair,
I think.
Fair.
Yeah. Sure. So we'll look, just follow musicals and follow Becoming Bill, check that out, and then watch out for the next one.
Yeah. If people want to come and see Becoming Bill, are there any sort of places they can go to like get are tickets out? Can people buy tickets?
Yeah, so you can go becomingbillmusical.com, but you can follow the musical on Instagram and Facebook, which is just Becoming Bill Musical. You can follow Old Fashioned Production Company, which is Old FPC. Which is, you know, a place that makes musicals, and it's a home for new musicals in Australia, new original stuff. And then there's the Brisbane Powerhouse website, which is where it's playing in August. And I mean, we've got, you know, Rachel Beck, who's a big, you know, star of the stage and screen, and Neil Gooding's directing. We've got some incredible Brisbane-based artists like myself, like Stephanie Long, Oliver Sampson. It's going to be a pretty exciting thing that's come out of Brisbane. So we're super excited that it's started here. It's having its world premiere here. And it'd be great to kind of get everyone along to sort of help build some excitement about it and to build something that's come out of Brisbane. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm biased. I'm the writer.
And what were the dates for that one?
August 14th we open and we close August 25th. So only a 2-week season, strictly limited before we go to Off-Broadway.
Sure. It's good to see people fostering the art of Brisbane.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's not a dirty word.
Yeah.
Words.
Words.
Sentence.
Yeah.
It's not a dirty sentence.
I feel like I had a thing to say. So this next song that we're going to listen to is from the musical.
This is me playing the guitar and singing the song. It's called No Feelings Today. The song doesn't exist like this now in the current musical, but I thought it'd be interesting to kind of hear from Dig that vocal delivery to this vocal delivery, to hear kind of, you can hear the remnants of kind of that writing style in that early song, and you'll sort of hear where it's gone to and kind of more of the story that I try and paint. And even this isn't kind of where it is today, but it's kind of a cool little baby photo, I guess.
Where does it appear in the context of the show?
Well, that's a really cool question. So he's, things are just going to crap. And his mum's just kind of, so Bill, he's writing the musical, he's trying to base it on his life, and he can't because he has no idea about how he feels about anything, and his mum's trying to get him to sort of be happy, and his girlfriend's trying to get him to just open up and just let her in, and then the brother says, forget all that, let's just sit here and play Xbox and drink some beers. And so it's the song's called No Feelings Today. I've just ruined the punchline. And it's now a duet in the musical now, but this is a version that I played on the record that we did, which is on Spotify and iTunes, and Peter Cousins and Natalie O'Donnell, if those people, if you're into theatre, mean anything to you. But so they're all on the record. And it's just me singing and playing this delicate, nice little folky version of it, which I hope everyone enjoys.
Fantastic. Well, we'll cap off with that. But before that, thank you so much, Brad, for coming on.
My
really
absolute pleasure.
It.
Thank you for having me.
Oh,
it was a lovely show, I think.
I think, it was nice.
Yeah.
It felt good.
It felt like a good big hug.
It did. Should we do it again? The HUG,
I think you're getting a no from Zane, your producer.
So I feel like you've already said the things that you would want to plug, but is there anything else that you might want to plug?
Just listen to my song Sucker, episode 13, I think it's going to be a cracker.
Hopefully.
We can't guarantee anything, but... Awesome.
James, do you have anything you want to plug?
No, I think, hang on. Yeah.
Is Alex just trying to get a plug in and he's waiting for one of us to ask him? Is this what's happening?
Maybe a little bit.
I mean, it's polite to ask him. It's everyone for a plug.
We're just being polite here. It's fine.
James, I cut you off. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure Short and Sweet is coming up later this month. I don't know the specific dates and stuff like that, so it's a bad plug. I'm not doing very good with this plug, but there should be Short and Sweet on the Gold Coast. One of the strands has a show that I wrote in it, performed by the sketch comedy group The Good Time Boys, of which I'm a part, and we will be doing that there. I don't have concrete details, so this is just look it up, Short and Sweet.
I mean, it's a good festival regardless.
Go see Short and Sweet. And Alex, do you have anything to plug?
Wait, thank you. Yes, I do. I'm also a musician. I'm your man, Alex Smith. That's my stage name. I'm not just a fuck.
we got so close.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, close. There weren't very many swears in this episode.
No, I kept us honest, didn't I?
Sorry, everyone. Squeaky clean.
My grandma image kept you down on my level.
But I'm on Bandcamp, Spotify, and iTunes. And I think like 3 weeks, August 9th, my next single's coming out.
Great.
Woo! So keep an eye out for that.
Woo, can't wait.
Damn.
You.
Till then, let's have a listen to No Feelings Today.
We can talk, we can sing, we can plea, we can bring, whatever you want, however you want. We can dance, we can pray, we can burp, we can fart, do whatever you want, however you want. But please, no feelings today. We can drink, we can stray, we can piss the night away. Do whatever you want, however you want. We can stumble around, we can fall on the ground. Do whatever you want, however you want. But please, no feelings today. Don't you ever get bored thinking about them, or ever get bored at all? Don't you ever get bored thinking about it? I just wanna watch a movie and hear you are feeling moody. I'm sorry. Change. No living or breathing, no dying, no heaving, no talk of it. No feeling.